The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
To the Eric Metaxas Show.
I'm the announcer, and I've known Eric since he was a big nobody.
In fact, I'm one of the people he stepped on as he climbed the ladder of success.
And now my former friend, Eric Metaxas.
Hey, folks, welcome to the program. This is the Eric Metaxas Show. I just happen to be Eric Metaxas. I consider that an amazing coincidence. Ignore what Todd Wilkerson just said always, because he's the best we could get on short notice in terms of, you know, announcers. He's a friend. I thought I'd help him out. But usually my guests make up for our lack in other ways. Today, I've got a humdinger, folks. I'm speaking to the author of a book. The book is called Narco Mindset. And the subtitle is The Life Principles That a Cocaine Drug Lord Learned on His Journey to Find Meaning in His Life. The former cocaine drug lord is my guest, Jorge Valdez. Welcome.
Thank you, Eric. It's really a pleasure to be on the show with you.
It's my pleasure to have you. You have an amazing story. And one of the things I want to do on this program is I want to get stories like yours out, because people do not know how dramatically lives can be changed by the God who loves us. And I say this particularly for people maybe who don't believe in God or don't know. Listen to this story, folks. Listen to these stories, because it gives you a different perspective. So, Jorge, the bottom line, I guess, is that at age 21, which is some years ago, you were a drug lord and a millionaire playboy. So obviously, you are not that now. Your life has changed dramatically. But what I'd like to do is go to the beginning of how you got into that lifestyle. You were working with the Medellin cartel, am I right?
Yeah, I was part of the group that was the original group that eventually became the Medellin cartel. And, Eric,
on the ground level.
Yeah.
That's where the money is. Yeah.
And it's amazing, because when I wrote the book Mindset, I did not realize what was going to be happening 6, 7, 8 months as it is today. You know, I look at all this thing that's going on, and it's all about mindset, right? I tell people, it's not what you look, how you look at the world, it's through what lens do you see the world. And, you know, I came from Cuba, very religious mom, didn't want her son to grow up in a communist country. At the age of 10, we were very wealthy. My parents were among the 10 wealthiest people in Cuba. Came to Miami, my mother gets left behind, and all of a sudden I'm 10, and 11 of us are sleeping in a one-bedroom, 750-square-feet apartment in Little Havana. My first decision that I make is, God ain't real. My mom is crazy. Because we were in school listening to Fidel, right? See, people talk about social...
Let me get this straight again. You were born where?
I was born in Havana, Cuba.
So you were born there. So you experienced what it is to go from being wealthy to communism. You with your own eyes, you saw this.
And exactly. That's why I tell people, now, if you think socialism is good, just go try Cuba for a little while, and then you can see. Because just imagine, my father, here's a 40-year-old man, extremely wealthy, multimillionaire in the 60s, in the 50s in Cuba. And my mother, you know, my mother, her father was like the second in command to George Washington in Cuba. So here you got my mother and my father, extremely wealthy people. All of a sudden, my mother decides, I'm leaving. I don't care if we leave everything behind. I don't care if we're going to go to the United States. And a lady that was born with a silver spoon in her mouth ends up working, picking tomatoes in the field, all because she refused her children to grow up in a communist country. See, we were in school, and we would come home. I'm just a little kid. So I'm coming home and say, hey, we learned this in school. Then my mother would say, that's BS. That's not the way it is. God is real. God is the center of a home. And communists are full of crap. Now, Fidel was genius. What did he do? When you were 12, he would take you away from your family. So let's say you lived in New Jersey. He would send you to live with a family in California. And then he would take the kid from California to live with a family in Chicago. Why? Because when I came home from school and I told my mom what they taught me about communism, my mother could correct me. But if I went to someone else's house and they tried to correct me and I went back and told the teacher, hey, the people I'm living with says communism is full of crap, they get automatic 10 years in jail. So that's how Fidel brainwashed people. Well, my mother said, I'll leave with the clothes on my back to a country where she spoke perfect English. My father did not. And I don't care because my children will not grow up in this communist ideology. My children will grow up in a country where they have freedom to be what God created them to be and to worship God freely. And she was willing to sacrifice and sacrificed it all to the point that at the airport. So my father originally did not want to leave because my father did not think communism was going to affect him the way it did. So, but my mother from day one, no, she would have nothing with it. So she files the papers because you had to file to leave. But because we were very wealthy, we didn't leave till 1966, even though we filed in 62. So my father said, no, I don't want to go. But eventually he decided. But at the airport, they leave my mother behind. They said they made a mistake and she couldn't leave. I think it was a political reason. But my mother grabs my hand. I'm 10. My brother's 9. My sister's 5 and says, George, take your brother and sister to Miami. I'll see you one day. Now, think about this. I didn't think I would ever see my mother again. I'm 10 years old. I have no idea. My world drastically changed. My mother loved her children so much, she was willing to let them go by themselves to a foreign country like many Cuban parents did with the Operation Peter Pan and ended up becoming very successful in America because she would have nothing to do with it. So I laugh when I hear all of this liberal politicians talk about socialism and communism. I'm like, you know, yeah, when I was young in college, we all wanted to be a socialist, right? Karl Marx is beautiful writing. The reality is, it's a failed system. It takes away initiative, creativity. And at the end, all it does is control people. So,
well, listen, I got to say, you know, Jorge, you and I have at least somewhat similar backgrounds. I mean, my mother grew up in East Germany and my father grew up in Greece. They had the civil war with the communists. They taught me to despise communism, to understand this is evil. It's not just that it doesn't work. It is evil. It crushes people. It brainwashes people. So to see this happening in America today, on any level is a staggering thing to me. And I speak about it any opportunity I can. I didn't think we would go there, but I'm glad as you prepare us to tell us how you became a major drug lord, you tell us that you did have this experience, but your mother had the wisdom to say, I mean, how painful it must be for a mother, but to say to her, hey, kids, get out if you have the opportunity and I will stay behind. So I have to ask you, did you see your mother again?
Yeah, eventually, by God's grace, she came 9 months later and she had cancer, but God healed her. And the interesting thing was, yeah, the pain for her must have been enormous. 3 little kids, sending them on an airplane by themselves. But it was less painful than the thought of them growing up in a communist regime. So we came to Miami, and I was mad at God. I thought, you know, the first thing, like everything that goes on, right? There's no God because things go bad and God doesn't exist. How can God let bad things happen to good people? Well, so we come, but my father had tremendous morals. So, I mean, to the point that my father, Eric, we were very poor. We basically, all we had was 2 eggs in the morning with this powdered Vietnam milk. Till today, I can't even drink milk because it didn't mix. And and that's all we would have for dinner till dinner time. And I remember a week after I'm in school and I tell my dad, hey, Dad, a friend of mine has lunch. And he just came 6 months before us. And my dad was, you know, the old generation. Didn't he speak very, very much. He just nods his head. And I said, he told me that he gets food stamps, Dad. And my dad just nods his head. And I said, do you know about that, Dad? And he says, yes. I said, why don't we get food stamps, Dad? And he says, because, son, that's for poor people. And I'm like, man, I'm so poor. I haven't gotten too poor yet. I got to work my way up to poverty. He looked at me that day, Eric. This was literally 54 years ago. Put his finger on my chest and said, son, you get up early in the morning and help figure how to feed your family because people that take money from the government are poor, but they will remain poor forever. And boy, it was just horrific.
Well, I got to say, what a lesson. We're going to go to a break, but There's so much here, Jorge. I just want to say thank you for sharing all this stuff. We're going to be right back. The book, folks, is called Narco Mindset. My guest is Jorge Valdez. We'll be right back.
Baby, when I met you, there was peace unknown. I set out to get you with a mind to go.
You know that I've been watching you for quite some time, trying to find a way of making you mine.
Folks, I'm talking to Jorge Valdez, Jorge Luis Valdez, who is the author of a book called Narco Mindset. He was a millionaire drug lord, started at the bottom with the Medellin cartel. Unbelievable story, and he's telling it to us right now. Jorge, so right now you're telling us about, okay, you grew up very wealthy in Havana. The Fidel Castro communist revolution comes, you go into dirt poverty, your parents drag you to America, which is itself a miracle to escape. And you go back into poverty in Miami. And of course, you're angry. You say God doesn't exist because look how we're suffering. So what happens at this point in your life?
But very important. My dad had tremendous morals. My dad taught us integrity. My dad taught us that a man, all he has in life is his word. So I worked very, very hard. And I was laser focused. I had this vision that I would graduate from college at 20. I would go to law school by 23. I would become a millionaire by 30. At the age of 17, I became the youngest employee in the Federal Reserve Bank in Miami. And they paid for me to go to University of Miami. I worked full time and went to school full time. By the age of 20, when I graduated, an accounting professor asked me, hey, George, do you want to come and work for us? He did not know how to speak Spanish, and he was a partner of Price and Waterhouse in Michigan. And he said, I'll give you secretary office, everything that I ever dreamed of one day being in business for myself. I said, sure. So anyway, I go to work for him, and he says, he gives me this little client, and it's a little grocery store. I mean, literally 20 feet wide by maybe 40 feet long, one of those little grocery stores in Miami. And the first day I get there, Eric, I see this bag with $100,000. Now, this is 1976. I'm 20 years old. And I said, $100,000. Now, I was such a nerd. I was such innocent that, number one, I had never drank alcohol in my life, never done drugs in my life. All I ever did was study and work, graduated top of my class. And so I wrote it off like nothing. You know, I didn't imagine anything. Next week I come, $75,000. Now I start wondering, like, what's going on? There's no way this little grocery store can produce all this money. The third week I come and there's another 120 some thousand. I called the man. I said, let me show you a little accounting formula. You buy something for a dollar, you sell it for $3, you got $2 profit. That means so far I've deposited $300,000. That means that you must have spent $100,000 in merchandise, except you only bought about $800. Something don't match. They said to me, they laugh. He says, oh, we're not in the grocery business, George. We're drug dealers. Now imagine how I felt at that moment when all of a sudden I'm working for drug dealers, a guy that would go to a party, smell marijuana, and leave. I tell my girlfriend, oh, I work for the Federal Reserve Bank. I cannot mess with my future. I didn't even have a traffic ticket. So, but immediately I said to myself, well, I'm an accountant. You know, as long as I don't break the law, there was no money laundering laws at that time. The first money laundering laws were created to come after us. So I crossed the line that I never said I would cross. And that's what we do in life, right? We cross the lines a little bit, and then before we know, we're just too far out. So they said, look, all we need, we know that you know how to open foreign bank accounts. I said, yeah, I work for the federal government. And he said, all we need is, can you open foreign bank accounts for us? I said, sure. How much? And I had no idea. I knew because we had done an audit of this guy that had a scam going on. And we know that you could open a foreign account in Grand Cayman for $750. So I said, $10,000. Now, $10,000 is a fortune. You know, I had a huge salary and I was making, I think, $4 an hour, you know? And they're like, okay, open three for us. And there, my life just changed. I opened those three for them.
Dirty money. In other words, you made a decision, even though it sounds like you were raised, as you said, very morally and you were very upstanding in every way, but suddenly, you saw easy money, and you look the other way about what's happening with the money.
No, exactly. And the thing about it is cocaine. Now we go back to 76 when cocaine was not even the radar. So immediately they start telling me, like everything we do, oh, this is only for the rich and famous. This doesn't go to poor people. Well, one thing led to the other, Eric, and I detail in the book. And within 6 months, I became U.S. head of all operations for that group that went on to become the Medellin drug cartel. And within a year, I was making $1 million a month by the age of 21. I had mansions. I had $1 million worth of cars. I dated the most beautiful women in America. And I had unbelievable power, but I was miserable. There was something inside of me. Everybody wanted to be George Valdez. I wanted to be anybody but me. And I look back after I wrote my first book originally 20 years ago, Coming Clean, after I wrote that, and then Narcomice, I come to think of, you know, I had a death wish. I was so miserable because in life, society tells us that once you have X, you're going to be happy. We all come with a void inside of us, right? And we know that only Christ can fill that void. But society will tell you. Women will do it. Cars, mansion. We abandon family. We abandon our children. We abandon our morals in search of that. 90% of us never reach it. I reach it. You get there and you realize, man, it's not here. So if it's not here, what do we do now?
And before we go to this, I want to kind of pause for a second. You're talking about being in the middle of a world that most of us have only seen in movies. And in many ways, it's glamorous. And in many ways, it's very frightening. Obviously, there's tremendous violence. Did you see that violence? Did you fear for your life? Because, you know, if you're at the top of the heap, somebody wants what you have. Did you see that? How did you deal with that?
You know, and that's where I'll get to that part with it. When we first started, there was no violence. When we were first started, there were gentlemen. And that's how you get tangled in, right? Because there was no violence. Our clients was Hollywood. Our clients were the rich and famous. And I walked around Miami like anything. We were not even on the DA radar. But then I crashed. I ended up, $1 million a month was not enough. I worked out a deal with the government of Bolivia. And where we're going to be making $7 million three times a month in 1978. And I got on an airplane, and I'm giving you the cliff notes of it, right? I get on an airplane in Bolivia. I work out a deal with them. But I get on an airplane, and we crashed on the way to the United States. My godfather, who founded the cartel, Manny Garces, didn't want me to go to Bolivia. He said, look, those people are animals. Those people will cut you into pieces. But, you know, you get to a point in life where you think that you're God. You know, I see that with the celebrities. I see that with a lot of wealthy politicians. Power. Power is the most heinous of all drugs. And I thought, Eric, nothing could happen to me. When my godfather said to me, how dare you get on the airplane? Don't you realize all our operations are in your hand? And I'm like, ah, don't worry about it. Nothing can happen to me. Well, we crashed over the jungle of Panama, and I was arrested. And when I got there, the attorney general came, and I said to the attorney general, look, I don't want to waste your time or my time. How much to buy the cocaine and how much to get out? He looked at me and said, Noriega sold the cocaine, $250,000 for you to get out. So I said, no problem. We had contingency plans, right? So I had a number that people would know that if someone called that number with a certain code, they knew how to respond with. We had $2 million readily cash to mobilize and airplanes within 5 minutes, anywhere in the world.
So Noriega, at that time, he got involved in the drugs with you. Happened to crash in the right place.
Oh, Noriega, listen, Noriega was more crooked than anyone you ever imagined. Noriega worked for the CIA and worked for the cartel. So we ended up, the attorney general gets the money. He said, look, I have arranged it. We're going to take you to the city of Panama. They're going to rough you up a little bit and make you look like we really care. And then you're leaving for the United States. And I said, no, I want to go to Costa Rica. See, I had just spent $1 million getting the president of Costa Rica elected the year before. So I said, okay, there's no problem. Well, we get taken to a city of Panama. And I tell the two pilots, listen, they're going to rough us up a little bit. Don't worry about it. We'll be home tonight. Well, they bring us into this room. It looked like a conference room, empty, just four chairs up against the wall. And they bring this kid, probably about 5'5", 5'4", maybe 100 pounds, naked, handcuffed to his feet and hand. When the pilots saw that, they cracked. They said, look, not only are we really drug dealers, George Valdez just bribed the attorney general. Well, They took us in a dungeon for the next 28 days. I was tortured. And, you know, and I tell people, you think that prison tortures, all of that changes you? No. I was brought to the United States. And in the United States, I was charged with heading the largest drug conspiracy in the history of America in 1979. And I had just turned 23 years old. I was given the highest bond ever in America. Started at $7 million, ended $2 million in 1979. A guy that didn't have a traffic ticket, a young kid. I had the best attorneys in the world. I had Alan Dershowitz, Marty Weinberg. And I just didn't care. I felt like, you know, I was angry at the world. I was angry at everything. There was no meaning. I couldn't believe why I treated women bad when I adore my mother. And I went to prison, and prison to me was like a camp. I had most of the people live there, work for me, or for someone to work for me. I had a blast.
That's when you were in America, you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
right, we're going to go to a break. Hang on a second, Jorge. Folks, I'm talking to Jorge Valdez. The book is Narco Mindset. Don't go away. Hey folks, Eric Metaxas here. The Trump campaign has a special offer just for you. The president really wants to give you a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat. He wants to make sure the lucky winner is one of his top supporters. Be sure to enter soon because this is an opportunity you don't want to miss. The offer is only going to a select group of supporters and you're one of them. All you have to do is text Metaxas to 88022 today for your chance to win a piece of history, a 2020 Make America Great Again hat. Again, that's Metaxas, Metaxas to 88022 to enter to win this contest and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for four more years. This was paid for by Donald J. Trump for President Inc. Today, you have a chance to make a difference. For families in Guatemala and the other countries food for the poor serves, COVID-19 is more than just a medical crisis. For the children, the most vulnerable, it's quickly becoming a food crisis. Informal markets are shut down, curfews are in place, crops can't be planted, and parents can't even earn the few dollars a day they relied on to provide for their children. The numbers are staggering, but you can change the world for a child today. Food for the Poor's longtime partners on the ground report their warehouses are empty even as the need grows daily. Those accustomed to working and providing for the families now beg for food to save their children. Your donation to Food for the Poor will get emergency food relief into the hands of the children who need it most. Your one-time gift of $111 provides three children emergency food relief for the next 6 months. A one-time gift of $185 feeds five children for 6 months. Make your most generous gift today by calling 844-863-4673. That's 844-863-HOPE. Or you can give online at MetaxasTalk.com by clicking the red emergency food relief banner. How many children can you save? Go to MetaxasTalk.com. Folks, I hope you're not just tuning in because the first part of the story is unbelievable. Jorge Valdez is my guest. The book is Narco Mindset. Jorge, so you talk about you crash land in Panama. Now, it sounds like they double-crossed you, okay? And they put you in prison. They torture you. Eventually, you make your way to the United States where you go to prison. And that prison, of course, is nothing compared to what you've been through. And it sounds like, I think you just said, like you're running the prison at this point.
Sure, I was running the prison. I was 23 years old. I was still making millions of dollars a month. Now think about it, $1 million a month in 1976. It's a lot of money today. It was a lot of money back then. But, you know, I got out of prison, Eric, and my mindset was, I'm going to get even. You know, they kidnapped me from Panama. I didn't commit no crime in the United States. Why am I going to jail? But the world starts to change, and some drastically happened. My mother finds out that I was a drug dealer. She didn't know before. She thought I was a businessman because I had many businesses. And she starts telling me, son, what you're doing doesn't please God. Son, what you're doing doesn't please God. But you know, my mother is the perfect example of what I consider tough love. My mother never waved, letting me know that I was doing wrong, that God was not pleased with what I was doing. But then she would say, what do you want for dinner today? She would let me know, number one, she never took a dollar from me, refused. I mean, I had I want to call them sleazy girls living in million-dollar mansions. And my mom and dad lived in the same $40,000 house they bought from Cuba. And they would not, they drove the same car that they bought with their own money. They refused to take anything from me, but they also refused to abandon me as their son. And that is critical. That is critical because my mother taught me through north. So even though I went south, east, and west, I knew what to come back to. So I come out of prison and I go back, same power, but then the world starts to change. Then I start seeing the killings and I start seeing crack coming and hurting kids. And one day I said, I've had enough. And I walked away. And when I walked away, my pain was so much that I thought I had literally less than a month to live. You see, we really didn't have a very good retirement program in the cartel. So, and the thing they couldn't deal with is the unknown, right? Why is George walking away? He's making $1 million. He don't even see drugs anymore. The guy is so removed from everything, but I just couldn't take it. I knew that it was wrong.
That's kind of an amazing thing, Jorge. I mean, you don't normally hear stories like that somebody is making millions of dollars in a criminal organization and that you decide to walk away. I mean, that's a big deal. Were you thinking about God at that time, or was it just that you were unhappy? What was in your mind that you would walk away? I mean, it's a shocking concept.
Right. And it was because literally, Eric, all I did was say, send the plane, don't send the airplane, and pay the big name people that we had on our payroll. I was dying inside. I was dying, and I knew some deep down inside that what I was doing was wrong, that it was not right. It was not, what my mother raised me to be. I had this future. I crossed the line, and before you know it, I was gone. And I just knew that it was not the right thing to do, and I didn't care that if they kill me. I had to get the whole life behind me. And people say, how do you change life? I said, well, I didn't know how to change. All I knew was if I'm going north, I'm going to go south, east or west. So I moved from Miami, and I went to live in my ranch, and I hired a guy to teach me karate. And the first day he comes, he says, I'm going to teach you about the sword. And I'm all excited because I love weapons. I'm like, oh, man, you know what? This guy is not going to waste no time throwing punches. And he turns around and has a Bible. And I looked at him, and I was, like, so angry and irate, And he's like, I'm like, dude, I'm paying you a lot of money to teach me karate. I don't believe in that book. I don't believe what that book talks about. Tomorrow you leave that sword home and bring the real sword. And he got up with him. I don't know, 5 inches on my face. I looked around. I touched behind me. I didn't have no gun. I'm like, man, this guy's 7th-degree black belt. He's going to beat Jesus into me, and I'm going to pay for it. I'm like, hey, dude, don't get excited, man. Don't get excited. For the next 2 hours, after we finish and the steam room is heating up, waste your time. He preached to me for 3 years. And that's something that people need to listen, because we live in this society that we like fast food, fast car, fast women. We don't invest in people's lives. This man, I did everything in the world to chase him away, literally, because he was eating me up. And people said, what did he say that changed your mind? I said, actually, I don't remember much of what he said. Later on, he took a lot of root. What changed me was his walk. He lived in such a little bitty world. And I looked at him, and I'm like, you mean you're married for 25 years to a 45-year-old woman, you're in love with her? And look at me. I'm surrounded by supermodels, and I hate them. You got to be on drugs, man. There's no way in the world that you could be happy. And I kept looking at him over 3 years, Eric, and he did not waver. I tell people, listen, we are the only Bible someone might ever see. And if I was to say one of the reasons why I was so adamant against Christianity, prison helped me be that. Because in prison, I began to see people that called themselves Christian didn't live no differently than me. And they were petrified of me. And I'm like, look, why would I want to go to heaven? You're scared for me to send you there. I'm going to go to hell. I ain't scared to go there. And anyway, that's where all my friends live. So why do I want to go someplace I don't know anybody? But this guy did not waver. Did not waver. When my first book came out, it was published by Waterbrook Random House, and they did a big thing in Miami, and his wife came up to me and said, let me tell you something that I've never told anyone. It was 3 years, Tim coming to see you, and one day he says he couldn't sleep. He'd get up at 4 o'clock. At 5 o'clock, he'd be on the road, an hour and a half to drive to see you. And teach you 2 hours karate. And he said, I'm not going back anymore, Turk. And I'm like, I didn't know what to say. So all I would say is, Tim, listen to the Holy Spirit. And he's like, yeah, I'm listening. He's telling me to get out. He said, Turk, that guy is the devil. I've been preaching to him for 3 years. From going to bad, he goes to worse. And Tim, listen to the Holy Spirit. Turk, that guy is the Antichrist. if the Antichrist is coming, it's that Cuban in that ranch.
That is amazing.
I'm getting out.
We're going to go to a break. This is the 7-minute segment. So we're going to be right back, folks. I'm talking to Jorge Valdez. The book is Narco Mindset. Folks, I'm talking to Jorge Valdez. The book is Narco Mindset. So, Jorge, we come to the story where you now say that you scared away your the guy who's supposed to teach you karate or whatever. He's preaching to you for 3 years, and eventually God tells him, get away from that guy. That's kind of amazing that he's with you for 3 years, and then he decides, no, I don't want to be near you anymore. You're frightening me.
Yeah. So he's telling that to his wife, and he's all pumped up to come and tell me, see you, but I don't want to see you anymore. And he says that when his car entered into my ranch and the guards opened up the doors and they checked the car, he said that the car stopped dead. He said it was the first time ever in his life that he actually heard the voice of God. And he said he heard God say to him, why have you given up on George? I haven't. And Eric, 3 months later, I gave my life to Christ. And how did I give my life to Christ? You know, it was my final divorce, July. I remember it so clearly today. July 1st, 1990, about 12 o'clock, and my divorce was final, and my ex-wife is dragging my baby girl, who was my life, away. And I was just at the point I just wanted to die. I went into my room, and I remember that prayer just like today. I got on my knees, and I said, Lord, I don't believe you're real. I just want to be honest with you. I don't believe in you, number one. Number two, if somehow, by some miracle, you are real, you're looking at me and saying, George, you're so bad. I don't want you up here. Stay down there. But if you are real and you're willing to change me and give me what that man has, because all the money in the world I have can buy it, I'll die for you. And, you know, the Bible said there's angels in heaven. Well, not for Cubans, I guess, because my life went from bad to worse. 3 months later, I get arrested. I get arrested for things I had done 4 years earlier. I didn't even realize that there was a task force. The government couldn't stand it, that I had retired a multimillionaire. And I got arrested in Jeff Sessions, Alabama, on his district. And when I get arrested, I had no idea. And my attorney comes and says, hey, don't worry, you're going to walk. They have nothing against you. The only witness died last night. He was smuggling in an airplane while he was still a government witness. And I went and I looked at him, and he's a Jewish guy. And I know him over. I said, Alan, you know, I love you, man. And here you are. Here you are, a good Jew telling me I'm going home. But there's this other Jew I'm giving my life to. And he didn't say nothing to me. But I can't go on lying. I can't go on fighting these people. I got to come clean. And he's like, are you crazy? You will die in prison. I said, look, if that Jewish carpenter does not change my heart and my life, I don't give a damn where I die. I'm dead already. I'm just walking. And he said, you want to come clean? We come clean. We went in there, and the governor said, lots of money, little time, little money, lots of time. I said, you know how much I got? And the prosecutor said, no, but I know who does. She opened the door, and 4 agents have been following me forever. As a matter of fact, I talked to one of them yesterday because they're my friends now. You know, I told him, I see all this hatred against police. I said, look, I looked at the world real simple. Their job was not to catch me. I said, David, your job was not to catch me. Mine was to get away. Your job was to catch me. I said, you caught me. And I thank God every day that you caught me, because you caught me, you changed my life. And you're not my enemy. And we actually been very close. This man spent 10 years of his life to lock me up forever. And today I consider him one of my closest friends. And I'm one of the person that had the greatest impact in my life. And the other 2 agents that are part of his team, also very, very close friends. So I said, I went in there, and my attorney said, look, just give him the time that he owes you on parole. Because you didn't catch him with anything. He's actually declaring himself guilty. He's voluntarily forfeiting all his money, over $40 million. And he walked away from this on his own. Anyway, they gave me the 10 years. I went back. I did a total of 10 years in prison. But in prison, I started studying because it's about mindset. I said, I can let the time do me, or I'm going to do the time.
And did go to prison. And in the 90s, all through the 90s, you were in prison.
Yeah, I went to prison in 1990. The first time I went to prison in 79 for 5 years. 19, I went to prison for 5 years. So in prison, I taught myself Greek. I didn't have anybody to teach me Greek. So I memorized the book and I got a bachelor's. And then I started my master's from Wheaton College. When I was released, I finished my master's at Wheaton College and I became a professor at Wheaton College. Met my amazing wife of 23 years now. Then I went to Loyola for a PhD in Bible. And I graduated. I was one of five Hispanics with a PhD in the entire country. And then my dad died. And when my dad died, I realized, man, how are my three children from my prior marriage going to remember me? As someone who sent a check and had a great summer, I'm missing my dad. He didn't give me anything. You know, I tell people, listen, your children don't need nothing you got. All they need is what you got that's free, your time. That's all they need. And so I packed and moved to Georgia. I didn't know what to do. I started a little Service Master franchise. I knew the CEO of Service Master, a little cleaning franchise. And in 12 years, I built it into a multi-million-dollar national and international company.
And I know the head of Service Master is a Christian. I've heard him speak.
Yeah. The amazing people. They changed my life, all of them. And then I looked at myself one day and I said, I told my wife, look, if a man can define when enough is enough, only greed would drive you. I want to be a dad to my kids. So I sold the company and we moved to Cozumel, Mexico, so that they will see poverty. Because now my wife and I both grew up in poverty. But my children now are going to the best school. We live in a multi-million dollar house. We have jets. We have yachts. And that's not reality for them. And I'm telling them that, listen, that's not the real world. And I wanted them to have a social conscience. And I'm going to move you to a place where you're going to see people love God that at the same time miss meals every day. And it was the greatest thing in the world. And then I just ran our foundation. When we started our company, I said, the way to make our company great, we're going to get 10% off the top. And people think it's, wow, horrific, too much money. But you know what, Eric? That 10%, God multiplied it so many, many times over. And we were able to help a lot of people. We created programs to get kids off of drugs. At Angola, the prison of Angola, I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yes.
I built the only Catholic chapel inside any United States prison. At Angola. I've been visiting there for 20 years. I led the men that killed Barry Seals to the Lord at Angola. 18 years of preaching to him. Very close friend with the warden. And now I just dedicate my time to try to make a difference in people's lives. And I see the horrors that are in our world that is going on. And like I tell people ask me, how come you're not scared? I said, well, first of all, what is there to be scared of? Number one, you know, if I live, I'm going to live with Christ. If I die, I'm going to be with Christ. So I can't lose to begin with. And if a virus takes me, which I think is a bunch of hoax, but if the virus takes me, I'm going to sit down with Jesus over that good wine and say, dude, you had to do a little better than that, man. I've been shot at 28 times, not a scratch. I fell off an airplane 3,000 feet, alive. Torture, alive. You cannot take me with a little sickness, man. So, you know, and I try to write about mindset, you know, about how do we look at the world.
We're gonna, when we come back, I want to hear about what the title of your book means, Narco Mindset, the life principles that a cocaine drug lord learned on his journey to find meaning in his life. We'll be right back. I am back with Jorge Luis Valdez. The book is Narco Mindset. Jorge, what do you mean by mindset? What do you mean?
You know, I tell people it doesn't matter how you see the world, what lens you look at it through. I choose to look at the world through the lens of Christ, right? So I happen to believe that if there's a lie in the Bible, I don't read none of it. If I don't follow Christ with all my heart, I might as well sin. Sin was fun, but it had eternal consequences. And I look at the division and the hatred that we have and how the liberal media is going ahead and dividing families. And it's horrific. Look, I tell people, I'm not politically correct by no means. I don't give a damn. You know, if you like me, I'm not afraid of anybody. I'm not afraid of any movement. I'm not afraid of shotgun because I believe that my days are counting. I believe that the day God wants to call me, I'm happy. I'm 64. I never thought I'd live past 20. So I'm okay. But I can't believe that we're going to live in a world where our children are afraid to say what they believe. Listen, we were poor. I came off that airplane in Miami at the age of 10 and had this lady right in my face. Cubans, go back. America is not Cuba. And I looked at my father. I'm like, why is she so mad at me? I haven't done anything. And my dad never said anything negative. My dad just said, son, work hard. You can't force people to like you. Whoever doesn't like us is not going to like us no matter what we do. But you can make people respect you. And the best way that you fight back is you fight with love. You don't fight by being angry. I looked at the Medellin cartel. Eric, we were the most powerful organization in the world. We were thousands of people. Within a minute, I could call and have 1,000 hitmen anywhere in America. And yet what happened? Violence among us, greed, selfishness destroyed us. We became nothing. So at the end of the day, how are we going to change the world? Through love. We cannot allow this to go on. And I tell my children, listen, I know that you're going to grow up in a country now that you're going to be afraid you're going to lose your job because of what you say, but you do what is right before God. You become a person of integrity and honor, and don't give a damn if you lose your job, because trust me, God will pick you up. God will redeem you, and he will protect you, but don't live in fear, and don't let this bunch of idiots intimidate you.
This is the kind of faith that we need in America. A lot of people in the church have gone over to the dark side politically. They have no idea of the evils of Marxism, of the evils of socialism. They don't know that Black Lives Matter is an organization that is anti-family, anti-everything most Black Americans I know actually believe in. And you know what? What you say, when you have this kind of faith, Jorge, honestly, you don't fear. You praise God, and you know that he will deliver you. He can deliver you. He is with you. What you've been through, I mean, your story is one of the most amazing I've ever heard. You know, the idea that you fell out of an airplane, and we didn't get the details on that, but that you were tortured, that you went through all these things, and you know that God is real. I think many people today, they say, I'm a Christian, I believe in the principles, or I say I believe the Bible, but they don't know that God is real and that he will act on their behalf, that he loves them. Maybe they haven't seen it. You saw it, and which is why I wanted you to tell your story. What is your previous book where you tell much of what you just said today? What's the name of that book?
My previous book is called Coming Clean, the True Story of a Cocaine Drug Lord and His Unexpected Encounter with God. You know, and like what you said is so real. I think that the sad thing I tell my children, you know, America's a Christian nation. We are the majority. We're just allowing a little minority to tell us what is moral, to tell us what family is, to tell us what is right. Listen, I don't hate anybody. I don't hate anybody. Because that ain't what God tells me to do. But at the end of the day, we just got to stand for what we believe in and not be afraid.
Amen. We are out of time. What a beautiful way to end. Be not afraid. Folks, speak your mind. Say what God tells you to say, and he will take care of you. Jorge, I feel I have a new friend. Thank you. Congratulations on the book, Narco Mindset. And I hope to see you again very soon.
Love, hope to see you again, Eric.